If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray. Our number here is 914-803-4522 for your calls. And I am joined, of course, by my, what are we going to call you tonight, Steve? I always say my brilliant. My co-host. I was going to say my brilliant. I wanted an adjective. My brilliant co-host, Steve Clark. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
So I'm sure that, you know, every piece of news I've seen today is covering what happened yesterday, a tragedy in Roanoke, Virginia. And I know that it prompts the conversation about gun control immediately, and it's also prompted a conversation about mental health. And I actually think the mental health conversation is probably more productive than the gun control conversation, because mental health falls into the category of what I really want to talk about tonight on the show, Steve, which is not the symptoms of what's wrong. I mean, gun control is a symptom, the economy is a symptom, the border is a symptom, terrorism is a symptom, unemployment, they're all symptoms. What I think we're not getting at is the underlying disease. I think that, and what prompted me to think this way is, this week I was going to see if I knew how to make a YouTube movie, so I downloaded iMovie onto my computer, and the other night, it was around 10 o'clock at night, I sat down at my kitchen table, and I wanted to test and see if I could make, how you even worked with this software. So I didn't think about what I looked like, and I didn't think about what the lighting was, and I didn't think about the background. I just turned the software on and began to record. And what came out of me was something that's been brewing in me for weeks, which is my reaction to the Planned Parenthood videos of slaughter of babies. And when I finished and I shut it off and I replayed it, I said, oh my gosh, that came out of me perfectly. I couldn't do that again if I tried, unless I wrote it down and it was really scripted. And I wrestled with, do I post this or don't, because I didn't like how I looked and I didn't like what my background was and the lighting, etc. And then I said, you know what, this is bigger than me and my vanity and my ego and what I look like. I need to get this out there because it's really fundamentally how I feel. Well, I thought it would get a lot of play. And it seems like it hasn't. It's got some people who know me commented, sent me comments, etc., positive comments. But I also posted a link to Twitter to the video. And as far as I can tell, it wasn't retweeted once. And I started to think about that, and I came to the conclusion that social media is really a younger person's, meaning under 40, a younger person's world. And that the values of that generation and those generations now, too, are very different. They've been raised differently. They've been educated differently. They've been exposed to really a whole new world that people over 40 haven't. And I think this is part of the problem. Part of the problem is, A, the people, those of us over 40, over 50, we're part of the problem in that we've created a lot of the mess that we're in by letting our values slip and by letting our politicians go down that slope as well. But the younger generation sees things very differently, and I'm concerned that a Bernie Sanders, who is an avowed and admitted socialist, could be, you know, not the front runner. Hillary Clinton is for the moment, although she looks like she's waning. And it's because they were raised on socialism. They were raised on very different values because of the education system in this country. So, Steve, where I really want to kick this off is just to talk a bit about, between us, about what the disease is as opposed to what the symptoms are. And I wonder what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I would just... start out with that. Excuse me, Carl. I apologize. I just start out that I think part of what's happened is that we've lost a sense of values in this country, and I think it's really, you know, people just, you know, get upset about it, but I think it's really just a loss of values in terms of we lost a sense of religiousness. We've kicked out God out of the country for the most part, and I think the if you look at just religious institutions as well as all other institutions, they've been on the decline. But really, there's been some injuries to the Catholic Church. There's been scandals in the church. There's been scandals in the Jewish faith, and there's been just an overall decline in morality. And I think that's really kind of the basics of a society is how is the law formed? How are values formed? And they're taught through, you know, basically the Ten Commandments: don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, as a basis for living a just life. And I think in many ways, we're trying to lead a life and live a life without those values anymore. And I think what happens when you're trying to lead a life and live a life without those values, you're basically taking God out of the equation. And I think that's been, you know, that's been the decline. I think if you look at it kind of on a spiritual sense or on a, you know, I would say on a, I'll only bring it back to what I know or what I believe in the Catholic faith is that life is dynamic, and you can improve your life through prayer, meaning the intercession of God's help can help your life in many, many ways. And if we remove that kind of intercession, remove that help from our society, it's not that praying makes you good, for example, but prayer does definitely help you prevents you from doing bad things, I'd say. It forms your conscience in such a way that I would say a lot of evil never takes shape. And I think what we're seeing now in our society in many ways is just pure evil. I mean, there's no way to look at, first off, that killing by a colleague to go onto national TV and then coldly, you know, cold-heartedly kill them. And then, you know, just take a look at something like what you're seeing with ISIS, with the beheading of people, going to towns, raping and killing people, the Planned Parenthood abortions. I mean, I don't know how else you would classify it, but as pure evil. And I think that's unfortunate. That's that's the society that we're living in today.
Well, a couple of points. Some I agree with you and some I would take issue with. I think what happened in terms of God and the removal of God is that there came this time when people said, you know, separation of church and state, we're supposed to have separation of church and state. The country was founded that way and the framers wanted it that way. And so when we took God out of the public square, there was some belief that we were really being American, because you don't want God in the public square, so to speak. You don't want God enmeshed in government, certainly not. And the mistake is that the founders were very God leaning people. I always hate that word fear. They were very not God fearing. They were very enmeshed in their faith. They simply understood that freedom meant everyone should be free to worship their own, whatever that is, or free not to worship at all. It shouldn't be state imposed. But the culture, the society, was steeped in God. What we did was we took God out of government, and then we took God out of the culture, God out of the underpinning. And that created the dangerous void that has gotten filled with all of this perversion, with all of these alternatives to faith. You know, I wouldn't say that prayer keeps you from doing bad things. I don't agree with you there. I think being taught proper morals and proper ethics and, you know, it's funny. I was listening to somebody, you know who it was? It was Cornel West. He's a liberal professor, black, African-American. And he was saying that this young man and our culture, the young man, the murderer who slaughtered those two in cold blood yesterday, he came from a culture, it's a lack of love. It wasn't racism, it was a lack of love, which he suffered from, that the culture's lacking love. And I listened to that and I thought to myself, and the example was that we all know what it is not to be heard, that we have a voice, especially in the workplace. You have grievances, you have gripes, you're not heard. And sooner or later, people who aren't heard become frustrated. Well, yes, I get that. I was in law school, I had complaints. I wasn't heard by my professors or my administration. I practiced law, I had complaints. I wasn't heard about the corruption within my profession in the county in which I practiced. Yes, you have a voice, you aren't heard. That's not to say that that's where all this violence comes from, people who are frustrated at not being heard. Cornel West was making the point that, you know, Black America isn't heard. It's sort of invisible, and it suffers from injustice, because the point he made is that love lacking in the public square is injustice, that when you have a loving society, you have a just society. And so he was saying there's a lack of love. Well, you know what? I have been frustrated in my life. I have not been heard. I'm a woman. I know what it is to be discriminated against. But it never occurred to me to go slaughter somebody because nobody heard me. I'm a Jew. I know what it is to have prejudice aimed at you. I know what it is to experience that as a woman and as a Jew. It never occurred to me at any point in my life when I was, and I had a man walk off a dance floor in Germany with me when he realized that in Spain, when he realized I was wearing the Star of David. He looked like he was going to get nauseous in the middle of dancing with me. He turned and left me standing in the middle of a dance floor, realizing I was a Jew. I didn't want to shoot him. I didn't want to stab them. That is not something that's coming from any kind of governmental bigotry or bias in our justice system. That is coming from a lack of a connection to ethics, values, and ultimately to a creator. Because if you don't believe in anything higher than yourself, then you don't answer to anything other than yourself, and you can always answer to yourself. You know, it disturbed me that Donald Trump was asked yesterday in an interview, has he ever asked God for forgiveness? And his answer was no, that he never has. Now, that's a very Christian concept. As a Jew, I only ask God for forgiveness once a year, and that's on Yom Kippur, and I ask that for sins I've committed against God. I can't ask God to forgive me for sins I committed against another human. For that, I have to contact that human, and I have to ask for their forgiveness. That's Jewish law. And if I don't do it, the burden is on me. If I do it and they don't forgive me, that's not my problem under Jewish law. That's their problem. But I have to reach out and ask for forgiveness. But it's not in Judaism as big a deal as it is in Christianity. And he's a Presbyterian, Donald Trump. So no, he's never asked God for forgiveness. And his answer was because he just tries to do his best. He always tries to do his best. And then he went on to say that he's not really a Bible guy as much as although he loves the Bible, he loves everything. He's a Norman Vincent Peale, the positive of power, the power of positive thinking guy. And I too am a power of positive thinking person, and I've written and spoke for two decades about having a positive attitude. But I also know it isn't my positive attitude perspective that has saved me in times of grave difficulty. It's been my faith that I have protection somewhere, that I have the love of God with me, and that if I try to turn my situation around, I will be blessed with divine assistance. And it's my realization that I owe that moment of honesty as between my creator and myself. I think we've done this. You're right, Steve. You're absolutely right. We've done it by taking a power greater than ourselves off the board. And when you do that, then everything's game, because ethics are situational. What I think is truth, or what I think is good, or what I think is right, is subject to me in the moment, if there are no absolutes around truth or goodness or rightness. And so I don't think we get where we want to go by fixing the economy or fixing the building a wall. I mean, there are the practicalities, yes, of living in the real world. But those are, they're like Band-Aids, as I said in the show promo tonight. It's like putting a Band-Aid on an underlying bone disease. If you don't address the underlying bone disease and you only address the lesion that's on the top of the skin with a Band-Aid, you're eventually going to die of the bone disease. We fix all of these isolated things that are wrong, we're still not going to make it because there's a disease underneath. And the disease is what filled the void when we made space by removing God.
Carol, I want to address one point. I think, believe it or not, I think Cornel West is on his comments. I think he's correct. And in if you look at the black community, I mean, it's been devastated essentially by the social programs where they kick the father out of the family. And so you have, you know, generations of families that have grown up on welfare, generations of family that have, you know, not been intact. The fathers have abandoned their children. You know, the percentage of out of wedlock births in the black community is massive. And so all that goes into a lack of love for society. And then you add on to the effects of, you know, their living conditions, the worst educational opportunities that they have, and just a general lack of parental guidance. It's really a tragedy. And then we expect these human beings to go into society and to act rationally and normally and to function under the same laws. It's absurd to me. The culture is completely broken down in so many ways that, you know, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. I mean, a lot of these people are very hurt, very damaged. I think I've told this story before, but when I lived in a previous complex, I actually did some, you know, basic tutoring for a kid that lived in a complex from the projects who was black, who worked in the community, and he was really trying to get out of his environment. I helped him with a bunch of things he had to write, and, you know, at 20 years old, he was functionally illiterate. And the pain that it was on his face, that he, you could see it. His, you know, his father had left him. He lived with his mother. He had a job, you know, at 20 years old that, you know, barely covered the bills. Most of his friends were drug dealers. And, you know, he went to a public educational system, public school system, and he left there barely able to write. And if, you know, I can only tell you how hard it is for me at times in making a buck, hustling up money, doing business deals, getting things done, the amount of pressure, the amount of stress. And I've taken a lot of time to educate myself, but my God, the damage that's been done to so many of these poor communities, it really is a lack of love, of the parents not staying together to raise these kids. And so, you know, I just think we live in a society that's going to happen. And you know, the one last point is, this the kind of disconnect between the family, how it's broken down. But just to even look at the bailout crisis in 2008, is that all the money went to help the institutions. None of that money ever went to help the average citizen. So the big banks, the car companies, everybody got in line. If you were a corporation, got paid. But where was the help? Where was the help for the people? There really wasn't. There was no help that was given. You know, so we live in a society that we help institutions, but we don't help people. You know, we help the social services in the communities, but we don't actually go to the people's houses and keep those marriages and families intact. So that's where, you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, these news stories no longer shock me, because I think that's the culture we live in now.
But those fixes are not, you know, this is where the whole liberal conservative thing splits apart. Those, I believe that liberals have good hearts. They want the same things that conservatives want. They want they bleed the same. They ache the same. In fact, one of the reasons people are Democrat and are liberal is because they think there's so much compassion in that party versus lacking compassion in the conservative party. And I don't believe either one lacks compassion as a party. I believe that they both want the same ends. They see differently how to get there. And, you know, the war on poverty brought more poverty. The war on drugs got us more drugs. I don't think governments solve the problems that we suffer from. We, in that sense, I'll agree with you. These are problems of the heart. We lack compassion. And I said it, we lack an understanding of our connectedness to one another and why we're here. And I said it in that YouTube video that I did, in the YouTube movie. You know, I said that in Judaism, in mysticism, Jewish Kabbalah, the belief is that when the Messiah comes, there'll be a second covenant of circumcision, the same way Abraham, the covenant between Abraham and God was circumcision of the male organ, that it will be a second circumcision, and it will be a circumcision of our hearts. And that the foreskin on our hearts that keeps us from being the human that we are meant to be, that keeps our soul from being front and center, will be removed. And we will be able to, in essence, the lion lays down with the lamb, we will live in a world where we understand that we're all one. United we stand and divided we fall. And so, but these are not problems resolvable by governments. You can't legislate morality. You can't legislate ethics. You can make punishment for breaking law, but that doesn't change people's hearts. So our problem, again, I take this back to a very human propensity to nourish your own ego and think that you're the greatest thing in the room, that there's no power greater than you. And when you do that, when you disconnect from a creator, when you disconnect, you know, I wouldn't care if somebody believed that God in the sky was a giant mainframe, you know, that was smarter than any other computer that we had ever made. And so that's what God is. If you don't believe that there's something greater than you, then everything becomes justifiable. And I think that's what we're suffering from, and I think that's how we're going to be humbled. I really believe something's coming, as do many people, not just in the metaphysical realm. I heard talk show host Glenn Beck this morning, who's in Birmingham, Alabama this weekend, marching in the footsteps of Martin Luther King, along with whoever else is coming from around the country to join him with a black pastor from Birmingham. I heard him say this morning that the people he's talking to in finance, in government, everybody senses something's coming. Not good. Something really big is coming, like next month or in the next 60, 90 days. I think we are going to be humbled. And I think it's what in Judaism is called a correction. It's a correction because we're so lost. And we so don't turn where we should turn, and we so don't do what we should do. Like you just said, Steve, we don't go into those homes and into those communities and try to keep those families together. There are people who do. I'm not one of them. I'm probably ashamed to say. I'm not out there trying to save those communities, or, you know, I guess I do what I do, and everyone does to their own degree in their own way. But when you talk, Steve, let me ask you this question about what you said. You know, yes, the black fathers of these children abandoned their families within the black community that is endemic. How did that happen? I don't know. Can two white people have that discussion?
I mean, I think it's happening. It's, you know, I think it's happening a lot more. It's just started in the black community. It's happening everywhere now. It's essentially the incentives, the economic incentives. It just boiled down to money. That if you had more kids out of wedlock, it was done out of a compassionate viewpoint. If you had more kids out of wedlock, you could get more money out of the state. And that's really all that it was. And I guess, you know, I don't know if it's a racial thing. I just think at that time when it was implemented, there was more blacks that were had harder living conditions. And they figured it out. They incentivized, you know, because they were on the lower economic tiers, they had more, they were given those incentives first, and the black community just figured it out. I mean, it's I don't think of it as a black and white thing. The economic incentives were there, and they took them. It's a completely rational decision. Have more kids out of wedlock, and you make more money. And that's, you know, that's people acting out of their own best interest. It was a horrendous decision by the government to do that. But if you're looking at the rates in, you know, the white community, they've escalated as well because they've recognized those incentives as well. I don't have the hard data in front of me, but I just think it's an economic model that was implemented. That's all.
Well, I'm not sure. Are you saying that you think it's all economically driven?
Well, I think once, you know, once the economics takes root, right, then all of a sudden, once economics take root, then you have a culture that grows up around it, right? So then the kids are born into welfare, and they see how the game is played. And I think it becomes now, it's unfortunate, it's endemic now, right? It's just become cultural. But I think when it was first implemented, you know, it's Lyndon Johnson's famous phrase, right? Once we pass this, we'll have the blacks voting for us for the next 60 years. He got it. He knew what he was doing.
You know, it's another show. It's not this show. And maybe we can end the show on this. I don't know. We've got about 3 minutes. But I want to say this right now because my brain just went to it. You know, I practiced divorce law for 14 years and saw a lot of marital breakdowns for a variety of reasons. And when I had my own, I would say that we came to a moment when what broke us, what broke the marriage, it was breaking. But what snapped it was we had an economic shift. I stopped practicing law, and a lot of money that was coming in through my practice suddenly went away, and I was not in a place where I was ready to go out and kind of earn that kinds of numbers again. And my ex-husband was very distraught. And so I'm looking at that. The reason I'm looking at that while you're talking is I believe an economic hardship can be a factor, but it will not break a marriage. It will not break a family if common enough values and principles are there. I don't think he and I had the values and principles that were the same to weather that storm. And so I don't think it's economically driven. I think the economics can be a factor, and a huge factor, and they can be the straw, as in my case, that broke the camel's back. But I go back to whether it's God or ethics or morality, people weather horrific storms and stay together. And families weather horrific experiences and stay together because there's something there. There's a bond, and that bond is generally around values and principles. And that's what I think we've lost in the culture. It's just, they're gone. We don't have any. And so, you know, I mean, we got a minute and a half, and that's we're into a heavy subject here, and probably well worth talking about again because there's more to it and because I really think it's foundational. I think our foundation is weak, and no matter what we put on it now, unless we shore up the foundation, whatever we build will collapse again, if in fact we last long enough to build something again. We're down to a minute, yes. So I go ahead, Steve, something,
yeah,
anything?
Yeah, just the last thing. I would just say that I've completely noticed that, say, 20 years ago, it was much easier to find common ground with people. But I think now, when I do talk to people, I can really notice in their eyes and their thoughts that there's generations that were talking two different languages now. Even if you look at the news, there is such a huge generational divide and a huge cultural divide that I almost think that it's almost, at this point, it's almost impossible to bridge.
Well, let's leave on a good note. There's always new materials to build a new kind of bridge. So maybe we'll pick that up in the next show. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.